You're listening to The New Normal for IT Agility, how modernizing your data infrastructure drives innovation faster. A podcast series from Aberdeen brought to you by Hitachi Vantara. Hosted by Jim Raposa, IT analyst and group director at Aberdeen, with special guests from Hitachi Vantara, Chief Technology Officer Howard Holton, and Global CTO Paul Lewis. And now your host, Jim Raposa.
When is the right time to invest in IT? To work to modernize your vital data infrastructure? Some would say now is definitely not the right time, that businesses should wait for things to get back to normal. But the evidence says that these people would be wrong. In fact, it's often when things are uncertain that leading businesses step forward to become more agile, innovative, and competitive. Aberdeen research has shown that leading organizations are constantly working to transform and optimize their data infrastructures, and that by doing so, they reduce costs, increase reliability, and ensure their ability to grow and overcome any obstacles. In this podcast, we'll look at the state of the data center today and how businesses are challenged to succeed and transform. And we'll analyze how best-in-class organizations are working with experienced partners to build and deploy strong platforms that lead them on a path to a more modernized and resilient infrastructure. I'm Jim Raposa, Research Director at Aberdeen, and joining me today to discuss these issues are Paul Lewis and Howard Holton from Hitachi Vantara. Hi, Paul. Hi, Howard.
Hey there.
Hey.
Thanks for joining us today. I want to jump right into these questions. So, you know, let's look at today's technology landscape, with not just with everything that's going on in the world, but just the current state of data infrastructures, the current state of data centers. Besides the things that businesses have to do to survive now, they're also faced with challenges to be more innovative, to be more agile, and you know, to face it, a lot of those, if you are more innovative and you're more agile, you're more likely to survive a lot of these conditions that we're all in today. So I just want to ask, I'll start with you, Paul, and Howard, follow right up. How is the meaning of IT agility changing for businesses today?
Well, the new normal has changed how IT needs to deliver. Howard and I say this often, that digital transformation projects are IT projects. You deliver on digital transformation with, you know, underlying technology innovation. And what's happening now is you're either a thriver type organization, you're a challenge type organization, or you're an organization that needs to implement change. Either way, agility is your means to do so. And this is business agility in terms of creating those customer experiences to create and find the customer segments you're currently not serving, or just to overwhelm the physical presence you have with some sort of digital presence. And business agility requires IT agility. And another way to say IT agility is implement IT projects faster. And that's from moving from, you know, the traditional 6 to 9 month and $1 million price tag for an IT project to 2 to 3 week and $100,000 price tag. And that requires you to make different IT decisions, anything from automation to cloud, rapid cloud deployment, to changing your procurement cycle.
I would second what Paul says, but I kind of want to take it a little bit further, because the reality is, nothing Paul laid out is something that IT organizations weren't already doing and looking at before this started. But what the current pandemic really has shown is the maturity of those efforts within the organization. Digital transformation didn't start March 15th, right? Digital transformation is something we've been talking about for half a decade. And organizations that had invested, had understood digital transformation, knew kind of their goals and place in the world that it had started down that, those are the ones that we find in the thrivers and challengers categories, right? The ones that were able to kind of pivot with the pandemic and sustain or even grow. Whereas organizations that didn't have a really good understanding of that are the ones that we see in the kind of struggling, you know, segment. So I would say what's changed is everything that we've really been talking about for the last 5 years has moved from that would be nice to do one day to holy crap, I wish we'd have done that yesterday. Let's get on it now.
Yeah, and in fairness, some of those constraints have been organizational, right? Some of those constraints are 30 people making decisions. Some of those constraints where the CFO is the only one able to make, you know, $1 million plus decisions. Some of those constraints were risk tolerance, right? To say, listen, I need zero bugs and sub-second response time, and it has to be perfect. Well, you know, we've had to change the dial back on those you know, macro organizational constraints.
Yeah, you know, that's really great points, and I love that whole idea of, you know, shortening the life cycle. And yeah, any of us who've been in IT for a long time, if you've seen our speaker bios, you know, we're we're not spring chickens. But you know, it's interesting that you know, I think there is this sort of perception that was the way things had to be. That is, projects, these kind of big data center, data infrastructure projects, take a long time. They cost a lot of money. They do include, you know, 30 plus people in every decision point. So business, say I'm a business, I recognize, I've seen how the leaders are those who are innovating, are transforming, who were ready and were more agile to overcome some of the problems. So I recognize that. But, you know, I have challenges in my way to carry out this kind of transfer, or at least perceive challenges. You know, in our research, we're constantly asking businesses what are their top pain points, what are the hurdles they have to overcome. You know, we see, you know, we ask about their data centers, their data infrastructures. They're always looking to meet performance demands, to have that ability to scale, you know, as not just for rising user and data demands, but the demands from new technologies. You know, they have to come up with the money to finance these data infrastructures, and they have to kind of ensure that they're not facing a lot of downtime. So I'm kind of curious, either one of you, you know, what are some of the top challenges you see as these businesses today are looking to take this step to really optimize and scale and transform their data centers?
So I would say the biggest challenge is the cost to be predictive. One of the major goals when you're doing any of these projects really is not just what will I look like today, but what will it look like in 3 or 5 years? Whatever the life cycle is of the components that I'm buying, of the contracts I'm entering into, of the service agreements that are on paper. And this is where I see a lot of struggle, frankly, because I kind of have to figure out what am I going to look like in 5 years, and how do the economics work both today and at the end of the 5 years, right? How do I buy enough of whatever the product is to serve my needs, and I'm not constantly asking for more? I'm not constantly, you know, hitting my budget over and over and over again, or in the case of a lease, having to do a renegotiation. And I would say the cost of failure in that predictability, right, the cost of being wrong is really, really high. If I say my initial purchase needs to cover me for 3 years, and 18 months in, I'm having to go back to the well for more of whatever it is, right? Storage, compute, networking, whatever it happens to be, right? Even application licenses, then I've probably failed in some percentage, right? My budget is now going to be off, all of those things. And then the other way is true too, right? If I finish 5 years and I haven't consumed the quantity I expected to consume in at the 3 year mark, I've also, you know, now I have to look back and go, well, that money could have been better spent elsewhere, right? I've got limited resources. Those resources could have gone somewhere. And I would say that's probably the number one biggest problem. The second one is we're at the biggest, fastest change that this market has ever had. And if you were to talk to someone 7 months ago, right, November of last year, and talk to someone today, I would guarantee their priorities have shifted. So how do I ensure that what I buy today incorporates those priorities, allows me the flexibility and agility to make those decisions? And at what point do I say we need to pivot? And I think that's the kind of third piece, which is the organizational challenges. The organization has to be able to also move as fast as the decisions need to be made, which means they need to be better informed, they need to be ready to make a decision, and ultimately probably need to avoid analysis paralysis, right? Probably need to avoid putting too many people in the room and having no chiefs and a lot of Indians, right? Ultimately, one of the things that we should have learned and hopefully are learning from the pandemic is when someone has the responsibility and makes the decision, things can change for the better. So those are my thoughts. Paul, what do you think?
Yeah, I think those are spot on. I think those are what we hear the most. And I think I might add to it by saying, you know, as CIOs, we tend to be the operator of past technology decisions, right? Time sometimes isn't our friend. Time creates, 3,000 applications in our portfolio from mainframe to AS/400 to client server to cloud. Time has allowed us to create and buy hundreds of the same types of tools. Time has created multiple line of businesses making their own technology decisions. Time has sort of changed how we're implementing governance and compliance and legislative and even contractual obligations, right? All of those are existing infrastructure challenges to which we not only need to innovate, but overcome before we can, start to get the agility we're looking for.
That's interesting. I literally wrote an article yesterday that said digital transformation is not about technology. It's about time.
Absolutely. And I think it is also fair to say, and we don't say this often enough, that capability and skill sets might be the biggest challenge, right? We have hundreds of people in our IT. They've been working for us for 30 years. They only know our business. They only know our applications. They only know our infrastructure. Well, it's very difficult to do something new when you haven't added that skill set, added that capability, added experience in things like automation and AI and machine learning and even just simpler concepts like DevOps and just different process requirements. Like, the talent might be the ultimate constraint or challenge.
And like we tend to be a little too rigid in our thinking, right? We tend to be kind of light switchy. We're going all DevOps, we're going all cloud. Well, we have 5,000 applications that stretch back 50 years, many of which the developers are long gone for. Like our technical debt doesn't easily move to DevOps. Our technical debt doesn't easily move to cloud. What's the strategy to get there? Well, we have 18 months to figure it out. That's not really a sustainable solution either, right? And that's where I think, an enterprise architecture practice really starts to pay dividends. Being able to look at the organization as a whole and say, hey, this is the destination we have in mind. This is where we're starting. How do we start minimizing or removing our technical debt to get us moved into what we see our future becoming? And really paring that down again to eliminate the analysis paralysis and just, responsibility decision move forward.
You're right. There's a lot of only, right? I'm going to be cloud only. I'm going to be SaaS only. I'm going to be blockchain only. I'm going to be AI only. When you might be first and you might be incremental, you might add it to your portfolio, but it's certainly not going to be only. The reality is there's financial and architectural limitations to do even first, let alone only. I often say, in fact, Howard and I talk about this all the time, there would never be a circumstance we could go back to our CFO and say, all I need is $1 billion and I will rewrite all the applications I have in my current portfolio in order to run in the cloud. We would be walking out of that room as quickly as I walked in.
Well, we might be escorted because he might wander foreign mushrooms.
Yeah, that's a really interesting conversation because, the funny thing that we see in the technology is that everything is moving away from that, especially when we look at the best in class and the leaders. They are much more likely to be looking at things like hybrid. They're actually, a lot of companies that we've seen that have gone heavily into cloud are actually moving workloads back to on-prem. And I do think when you look at these sort of agile, transformative businesses, they are definitely avoiding that kind of only. They're looking definitely for much more integrated, use what's best for the job kind of technologies, whether if they're using some kind of hybrid data infrastructure or maybe they're moving to take advantage of, containers and microservices and Kubernetes, all of which kind of work better in these sort of agile, non-siloed kind of infrastructures. So I think what you're talking about definitely kind of leads to where transformation needs to be. So a question I have there, if I'm a business that wants to do these things and they want to, we just recently completed across all the practices at Aberdeen here, a survey on resilience in the face of pandemic and quarantine. And the interesting thing we saw is that a large majority, like 77% of businesses are looking to do these kind of things, to improve and modernize. And even over 50% say that they have no limitations whatsoever on their ability to spend to improve their IT capabilities. So we definitely see that businesses want to do this, that they're driven to take these steps. What should they be looking to do to kind of build this kind of agility, resilience into their infrastructure? And what can they be doing to kind of balance the need to you know, gain this kind of speed and fast decision making while not adding to their risk? So basically being able to be innovative and agile without increasing the risk and costs and things like that. Paul, I'll kick the question to you first.
Sure. So I think there's five parts to this IT agility equation. It's probably not all encompassing, but you know, these are the five that we certainly hear the most. So the first one is a pretty big ramp up of your cloud migration. So what's possible? The migration and modernization. What's architecturally possible, what's financially feasible. But even if it's not financially feasible, as long as you're receiving the agile nature of it, that I can deliver on this particular function point faster than I have before, it might be worth the incremental cost. Number two, either shift to consuming more SaaS or SaaS versions of the core products that you have. Maybe it's a SaaS version of SAP. Or JD Edwards or other sort of the bigger core applications with your environment. And that sort of alleviates what we'll refer to as the ecosystem. Sometimes when you buy these core products, it is 20% of the entire ecosystem and you've rewritten, you know, the enterprise service bus and services around it to deliver on customizations. Well, customizations aren't your friend in this world. Number three would be about scale out. So if I were to refresh the technology infrastructure environment now, would I buy big iron and scale up and hope that I can handle the workloads across my entire portfolio? Probably not. I would refresh for a scale out. Single nodes, single components. And as I massively scale in this new normal and I come back to normal, right? When I come back to the actual scale that I require, I can reallocate that infrastructure set to the other new projects, new business, new applications that make sense to me. And then I can control sort of at a micro level how much I'm going to grow from a scale perspective. Number four is about automation, right? Some of this is process type automation, like DevOps, where there's a process and technology and even a cultural impact to those things, or data ops, which would be the data fabric equivalent, but it's much more about integration, orchestration, and potentially visualization. But then some of the micro stuff, right? So, you know, 17 steps in my run book, there really should be two, and that two should be invoked by an application developer so that I can shift my IT administrative team to an IT engineering team. And then I can add sort of the AI part of that, right? So move it from a diagnostic type automation exercise to a more prescriptive or predictive diagnostic exercise. And then finally, sort of the financial side, the procurement side. How do I shift away from project acquisition to project allocation? The reality is if I'm moving from 6 to 9 month IT projects and making them 3 week IT projects, it's physically impossible to design, architect, procure, have delivered, install, rack, and configure infrastructure in 3 weeks. Not possible. Therefore, those components, those resources must already be available, either creatively or not, in my control or not. And therefore, I have to procure differently. I need to procure maybe on a quarterly basis, or I need to procure based on my performance analysis or my capacity analysis. And I need to allocate those resources by project, which means I can't acquire by project, and I have to look at a variety of different sort of flexible consumption needs. It could be capacity on demand. It could be managed service. It could be as a service. All depends on that particular application. So I think those are the five, but it's not all encompassing.
So I'd like to talk about it a little different way. And I'd say the success and failure is found by starting with capabilities. Everything Paul mentioned is absolutely required, but you have to start with your capabilities because that's going to define whether a pivot to anything new is going to work or not. So I'm going to tell a little bit of a story of a customer. I'm talking to a customer and the customer says, my biggest challenge is I've committed to a $5 million five-year contract with Amazon. The expectation was I'd be over $1 million at this point, and our current run rate just hit $100,000. That's our expected for the year. So I am 90% short of my expected run rate. And I said, what did you do to change the capabilities of your team to build for Amazon? And he said, nothing. We entered into a contract. And that right there tends to be the problem more often than not. Hmm. No as a service is snapping a finger and solving a problem. As a service is part of a strategy to move you from your current capabilities to your new capabilities, right? And when I dug into it, I said, your big problem is your tribal knowledge, right? You simply don't have workers that will become code workers. You don't have workers that are really going to take advantage of the value of cloud. And he said, absolutely. And I said, cool. Did you know there's tools available that allow you to solve that problem? No, of course not. Because we didn't start with the capabilities, so we didn't then map out where those, how those capabilities need to transform, what the steps are, and then try to find solutions for those steps, right? We made a decision thinking that this technology was going to solve our problem, when in fact technology does not solve the problem. The strategy around the technology solves the problem. Good strategy means the technology works, you gain a new capability, you push the business forward. Bad strategy means you've purchased shelfware, at least to some percentage. And so if you wrap everything Paul said in a strategy revolving around your capabilities and how they need to evolve and change, you will absolutely find success each and every time.
Right, that's a really great point, Howard. I do think a lot of businesses, you know, they jump into these projects, they jump into these kind of investments without building those strategies in, without really, as you said, kind of asking the questions they need to ask before they dive in.
Well, I would say it's even harder for those of us that have achieved leadership coming up through the ranks, right? Because we look at it differently. We remember fondly and a little nicer, you know, with a little bit of revisionist history, how easy it was for us to pivot and change with new technology. I took the book home on a weekend. I read it. I came in on Monday and I knew what I was doing, right? That's definitely revisionist history. And I think we kind of make the mistake of thinking everyone works the way we remember ourselves working, the way we remember ourselves learning. And what I would like to say is put the brakes on, take a step back, and create a new communication channel that says, if this is where we need to go, your people must educate. Tell all your leaders, your people must educate, they must learn. What is your plan to involve active education, active participation to ensure those things occur?
And I'd argue that that's will need to be a pretty big shift in the procurement model, right? Your supplier, your partner model, where it can't just be about the acquisitions of software or infrastructure or services. It has to be about acquisition of capability. It's not over until I now know as much as you do about the thing I just bought, that I'm now capable of operating it just like you were capable of operating it. That's the KPI. It's not whether it's in production or not.
One of the smartest things I did is every one of my Hitachi purchases ensured that I also had High Card to go along with them, which is the kind of unlimited training certificate that went along with it. I also made sure to set up at least quarterly lunch and learns with my vendors. So they could come in and every quarter they would present something new, whether it was a feature that I wasn't taking advantage of, or maybe something I wasn't using efficiently. It was maybe the new next version or a new product that I hadn't seen yet that they thought would work for me. Mm-hmm. And really being an active participant and taking an active role in that made a monstrous difference. Because I was better informed, my team was better informed, we were better able to handle these things, and it really improved the breadth and depth of my capabilities.
Paul, Howard, that was really good. Some really good takeaways there. So, some great feedback on how businesses can kind of rethink how they're going about transforming and really overcome the challenges of lack of skills and lack of expertise and just taking that those right steps to transform their data center. And really, if you're any business looking to transform IT and data center infrastructures, if you're looking to increase reliability and boost your ROI, you do need to find these ways to overcome those challenges and really improve how you're leveraging technologies and taking advantage of today's strategies. And really to reach this level, you've got to be one of those organizations that is embracing new and improved data infrastructure solutions, removing barriers to innovation and agility, such as a lack of expertise and just not really thinking about stuff and kind of following those old patterns that we just talked about. So really, once you've carried out this kind of transformation, put in hand those kind of improvements, you can really exceed expectations, gain new efficiencies, and optimize your entire IT infrastructure. I want to thank everyone for joining us, and I want you to look for other podcasts in this series on data center modernization.